John's Gospel account of the resurrection, at least the initial one, is a bit unusual because the Synoptic Gospels say that the first sign of the resurrection was the appearance of angels at the tomb. And I want to talk about angels a bit this morning because they're there at the front end and the back end of the story in the Gospels. First of all, an angel let Mary know about her remarkable gynecological destiny. Angels appear in the night sky over Bethlehem, announcing the birth of the Messiah, and they're there at the end of the temptation in the desert ministering to Jesus. But we've had an absence of angels for the last 3 years, and now they turn up again at the end, when Jesus is in great existential distress in the Garden of Gethsemane on the last night of his life. We're told that an angel ministered to him. And after the death of Christ, when the women go to the tomb, who do they find? Angels. And the significance of all this, as we know about angels, is that they're messengers from God. But they're more than that. They also announce a kind of change of gears, a shift of scene, and in this case, something that God is doing which is new. And what angels also do is to help people prepare and get ready for this shift of understanding. They, if you've ever been the purveyor of good or bad news, you'll know you've got to prepare people first. You can't just blurt it all out. And this is what the angels do. They assist people to prepare to take on board a new understanding, which is going to be a struggle for them. And in fact, when the women rushed back to tell the other disciples, they didn't believe them. Now, what the good news or the shift of understanding is that first of all, the very nature of time itself has changed. And also, God's relationship to the world has changed. You see, Jewish people believed that if the resurrection of the dead had occurred, that must mean that everybody would be risen at the same time, and that would mean the end of history. But the news is different. The news is that one person has risen in the middle of time, and that the time afterwards is a time of patience and God's forbearance to give the human race the time it needs to come on board with the good news and to follow it, and to be prepared to ascend to be with God in the life of the world to come. But more than that, that the message which so far in the ministry of Jesus has been addressed entirely to the children of Israel is now for export. It's for everybody. It's addressed to the whole world. And the immediate followers of Jesus are now to be the harvesters of this great harvest of souls. They're going fishing for souls afterwards. And that's the biggest message of all, really. The mission's changed. And you've got a really big task ahead of you. And I'm coming back to you to reassure you and give courage for this assignment. Now, angels turn up at the very end of the New Testament in the book of Revelation. The church is now under persecution. And a kind of parallel to their earthly struggles is the struggle of the angels above, who wage war on behalf of the church of God, commanded by Michael, the great warrior angel and archangel of the angelic hosts. After last night's sermon, somebody told me about a remarkable time in which an angel appeared to her to let her know a remarkable piece of news about her son, good piece of news, the room filled with light. I wonder if you've had experiences of that. You might be prepared to write off angels as some kind of mythological leftover bit of the New Testament. But it's interesting how many of the great heavyweight theologians of the 20th century have given time and space to these spiritual beings and consider them part of the plot. And the last point I want to make is this. You know, as the 1960s wore on and secularisation appeared to be the big tone, the message of the day, radical theologians, many in leadership positions in the church, said that what the church needed to do was kind of to tune into this demystified modernity and trim the God flannel down a bit and just to kind of find correspondence points in our surrounding secular society. And then in 1970, a religious sociologist called Peter Berger wrote a book called A Rumour of Angels, The Reappearance of the Supernatural. And he said, if this is the way it is, that secularisation is setting the tone in every way in Western culture, that there's some very odd things going on, like our young people keep turning to the mysticism of the East. They just can't get enough of it. And books by people like Thomas Merton, the contemplative monk, they're selling like hotcakes. And intense forms of religiosity like Pentecostalism and the Charismatic movement are making a huge impact on the churches. And when we look at the religious orders, okay, thousands of people have left, but they've been from the active orders, which our surrounding secular society ought to thoroughly approve of, because they're doing good works all the time. But the religious orders, which are doing quite well or holding their own, are the contemplative ones, you know, the people who believe in that useless activity called prayer. They're the ones who've kept the plot, as it were. And so he said, these rumour of angels point to the fact that the deep religious instincts of humankind can't be suppressed, and that those forms of religiosity, those forms of organised religion, which are high on what you might call mysticism, a sense of awe and wonder, a sense of connection to the central realities of the faith, they're doing well, they will do well. And we might like to ask ourselves in conclusion, where are the rumour of angels in our time, our culture, our space? The sudden unexpected things that God does to announce that, hey, things are different around here and I've got something new on the boil. And don't just think that the kind of pattern of unbelief is the way it's going to be in the future. Spoken in the name of God, Father, Son and Holy Spirit.